Welcome to the LaRue Show. This is Saturday, June 2nd, 2012. I'm Marcia Mary Baker. And our topic for today is Only Glass-Steagall Can Halt Global Breakdown. And we have arranged a live roundtable of four guests speaking from Europe, directly who are active there, who are activists for a radical shift, a sudden shift to the Glass-Steagall principle and restoring development and emergency measures. And so for this hour, we have a great deal we can cover, and what I'm going to do to start is to introduce them all without all at once, without stopping. They're all connected, I'm glad to say, and I'll go north to south somewhat, beginning with Ireland. In the north there, we are glad to welcome back to the show Jean Douglas, who's with the LaRouche Irish Brigade in Ireland. And then, proceeding to France, in Paris, we're glad to welcome Karel Verrijken, who's speaking to us from Paris. He is a candidate that's part of a 78-person slate running for office today. He can't speak about that because this is it's against the law to do so on election day. That's fine. But Karel has a leader for some time in the Chaminade policy for Solidarity and Progress, and he'll have a lot to say about that. But today is the election. Switching eastward to Germany from Wiesbaden, we're very glad to have again Dean Andromedis, who is very active there, and you know from Executive Intelligence Review Online, EIR Online. And finally, we are especially glad to have speaking with us from Northern Italy, Flavio Tabanelli, who is a member of the LaRouche co-thinker party in Italy, Movisol. I think that's Movimento di Solidarietà. And Flavio is from Northern Italy, from the Emilia-Romagna district, in fact, from Mirandola, which has been in the center of the terrible earthquake, but he's able to be with us today. He'll be speaking about a number of things. So what especially, as I say, brings us together is the topic Only Glass-Steagall Can Halt Global Breakdown, and it's especially of great interest to have people giving their firsthand reports from Europe of the situation, of their activism, of the potential, because the transatlantic-based world monitor system is done. It's over. It's gone. It's only the Glass-Steagall option, and that means for us a special task here in the United States to get President Obama aside, who has been a functionary for the London Center behind the kind of imperial monetarist policy that's now dead. But what we have going on day by day in emergency measures discussed for Spain or for Italy or this bank or another bank is just the death throes of this system. And if we have any more of this continuation of the kind of bailout thinking, it's going to be for mankind, mass death by bailout. It sounds like a murder mystery, but that's what it is. So we don't, for most of you regular listeners, we do not have to go through the principle involved of Glass-Steagall, namely that it cancels the gambling debt nature of this dead monetary system. It makes way for emergency measures, including the issuance of credit, the reestablishment of a credit system that can serve national interests for projects that are necessary. In North America, we've had the North American Water and Power Alliance. We have the updated 21 version. It's been shelved for 60 years, this project, or for 40, 50 years. And in Europe, likewise, it is known what ought to be done. Dean Andromedis, Flavio perhaps, but others are working on a Mediterranean Basin Emergency Development Marshall Plan type program that EIR Online is going to make available next week. So What, well, let me put it this way. For the Queen's Jubilee that's being shoved down everyone's throat, celebrating, so to speak, the 60th year of Queen Elizabeth being on the throne, the best thing that could happen is we cancel the empire. And in that regard, we have had the notable, many, several notable developments, but I want to, I hope everyone listening knows that this past Tuesday in the primary elections in Texas, Keisha Rogers, part of the LaRouche national leadership slate in the country, won the Democratic Party primary nomination. She'll be then running in the Houston, I think that's the 22nd CD in Texas, in Houston. And this shows the way of, shows the mood, shows the potential of forcing the shift that I was talking about. Another part of this national slate, Diane Sayre in New Jersey on June 5th, does have her primary election. But, you know, it isn't even summed up in the votes. The leadership impact is gathering a huge force. I say an aside, I just noticed the Wall Street Journal, I noticed it last night in their coverage today of what they see as, golly, there's a pattern of Democrats separating themselves from Obama in the country. And they mention Keisha Rogers as one of those people, since she said, go for NASA, go for Glass-Steagall, and dump Obama. That's an understatement by the Wall Street Journal. But this is the kind of dynamic that's underway in Europe. In France and Germany and elsewhere, there are elements moving in a different way in this direction. I mentioned to our panel participants today that just in the last few days, a national call-up in the United States of bank officials that we call here in this country community bankers, local independent community bankers, who are part of smaller, privately owned local banks, not part of the big five mega banks. They were very keen to know the latest from Europe and the transatlantic situation, the latest prospects for the Glass-Steagall bill, House of Representatives 1489. It has around 63 sponsors now in the House. Some of them didn't even know it existed. So it's a question of going all out. And in that respect, I'm just going to say this, that keep in mind that the danger point in all of this is the mad drive for war as the reflex reaction of those behind wanting to retain the dead monitor system, the British Empire types, London, Whitehall. You're getting that regarding trying to force outside intervention and military invasion of Syria. One flunky for London, U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice to the United Nations, said so last Wednesday. She said we should go outside the United Nations, go outside the Kofi Annan plan for peace in Syria. So that's how blatant it is. Keep that in mind. But now back to a particularly something that received wide attention. That is, last Thursday, that'd be May 31st, in Ireland, there a vote took place, a referendum on this insane bailout policy, actually on whatever they called it. We'll hear from a minute in Jean, the Stability Pact or the Austerity Pact. And Ireland is one place that they had the nerve and guts to schedule the vote. Jean can tell us what actually happened. It wasn't this rotten pact wasn't voted down. But Jean, why don't you take it from there and discuss what's involved in that situation?
Yes, Marcia. Unfortunately, the referendum was passed, you know, on a margin of 60 to 40%. There was a low turnout of 50% of the electorate. So, you know, it's extremely disappointing, I suppose you would have to say, for people that have been you know, campaigned pretty hard for a no vote. But you know, it has been passed, you know, and the thing is that it can't, you know, in any way be considered a victory for the government that promoted the yes vote, because I mean, they had to resort really to scare tactics to get it through. And I mean, there were threats that, you know, Ireland's funding would no longer be available if we voted no, and also that the upcoming budget would be so much more severe, you know, in light of that. So I think people were really just, you know, scared of the voting no, and, you know, people have commented, you know, that some people were going to the poll and, you know, putting a yes vote through gritted teeth, because they just felt that they were cornered, you know, when it was the only option that they had, you know. So it's just a disappointing result. There's a kind of a significant split you can see emerging in the country over the referendum outcome, or through the pattern of voting, and that is that, you know, the more affluent areas, you know, were tended to favour a yes vote, and the more working class areas, you know, tended to have a stronger no vote. So I think that's kind of significant, you know. But I think, you know, in this current situation and under this monetarist system, you know, that people are forced into a position where, you know, they feel that they can't, they have to look out for number one, you know, look out for themselves, do what they think is the right thing, you know, for them and their families. And of course, you know, once that kind of mentality takes over, then, you know, there's less thought about the overall direction of for the nation, I think. And so, I mean, that's really the situation. You know, it has passed, but I think a lot of people, and the people that voted yes, in fact, will, you know, are in for a pretty rude shock in the days and weeks ahead, you know, as this you know, financial system continues to crumble. And I think if they thought that, you know, a yes vote was going to alleviate some of Ireland's problems, you know, they will be extremely disappointed. So I think it means trouble clearly for the government, you know, once that realization comes to dawn on people. And you know, I think that Sinn Féin have really, you know, their vote, according to opinion polls, has increased dramatically throughout the referendum campaign. For example, they went from a 10% vote in the very recent general election, which was just last year, and the latest polls suggest that they're on 24%, which is, you know, a huge boost for them, basically because they stood in principle and stood, you know, firmly, you know, rejecting this, you know, this austerity treaty. Their gain has been mostly at the expense of Labour, which are their kind of traditional rivals, you could say, for, you know, for the working class vote. And Labour's vote has pretty much collapsed from 20% in that last year's election down to 10% at the minute. Also, Fianna Fáil, who supported the yes vote, you know, lost substantial support, you know, for the campaign. But I think it was demoralisation, you know, the turnout, as I said, 50%, signals, you know, a similar pattern to what Mr. LaRouche has identified, you know, in recent elections, including Keisha's over in the US, that the electorate do seem to be, you know, demoralized to the point that, you know, they're not going out to cast a vote because they, you know, don't see the system changing, you know, they don't see anything significant changing for them. And it's unfortunate to say that I think, you know, part of the problem with the no campaign was that clear, correct solutions that, that we all know, the Glass-Steagall and move to a credit system and a physical economy type program, that is what is needed. And nobody, unfortunately, was presenting that as, as the necessary alternative. It's possible that the electorate recognized that fact, that they weren't being offered, a real alternative and real change. And I mean, a lot of the campaigners for no, they're still stuck really in the monetarist mindset, and they have talked throughout the campaign about Ireland's ability to return to the markets and so forth. So I think, that aspect has been disappointing, and I think it has told us, it has been reflected in this demoralization and this unwillingness of people to come out and actually cast their vote. Bear in mind that I actually attended a couple of no campaign meetings and so forth at ahead of the referendum, and what people were saying were that, the campaigners were saying, the organisers were going out and they were getting practically 100% support for the no position, but of course that didn't translate, on the death toll. As I say, I think demoralisation is the key factor there. So that's, the current situation in Ireland, and the shock will come in the coming days and weeks when, as I said, the financial system continues to deteriorate and fall apart. But and also the bad news on a sort of a national level here, about what, the new taxes and new charges, all sorts of new impositions on people, will only be coming to light now, because they were, of course, suppressed when they run up to the election to ensure that the yes vote won through. So that's really, as I say, all I can tell you about. There's not very much positive to take out of it, except, as I say, the Sinn Féin vote has increased quite dramatically, and I think that is a good positive thing. And we just continue to try and work with Sinn Féin and try and, bring to light the solutions that are necessary, and hopefully that they will embrace them and present them.
Yeah, right. I think that what you're saying must resonate strongly in France, Germany, Greece, Italy. Whoever wants to speak up next, please go ahead. I was thinking, Karel, you may want to say something about the leverage factor of Jacques Chaminade's national presidential campaign, in the same regard that Jean brought out about the dynamics of moralizing people.
Right. Can you hear me?
Very well, thank you.
Okay. Now, just on the Irish vote, one point I think is important to make is that, well, Europe has 27 member states, of which only 17 are members of the Eurozone. And the way the treaty has been written up is that you only need 12 states of the Eurozone to ratify the austerity pact to have it applied, which means basically they already, even if the Irish had voted against it, it has been already planned that the thing would be put into place anyway. So it just it shows the arrogance of this whole European construction the way it is. Now back to the French situation is that it is we definitely how can I say it? On the Glass-Steagall as such, since we have been campaigning and with Chaminade over the last 2 years very intensively on this specific issue, and that during the whole campaign process, there were at least three or four other candidates, be them from the left or the right, which have taken up at least the words of banking separation in one form or another. Today, this is a totally hegemonic. I mean, it's a complete consensus in the population that this at one point should be done. So this allowed us to change now the focus, not on banking separation as such, but on the whole issue itself of productive credit generation. And this immediately is coming up because you have to know that 5,000 cities and local communities and local governments in France have been gotten into toxic debts, which means these were variable interest rates, which were based on the link between, for example, the euro and the Swiss franc, which was supposed to be completely stable. So all these local governments saw the interest rates of their debts go from 1% to 5% to 10% to 15% even to 20%, which they obviously cannot pay. In the same time, we had this big bank, Dexia, which is a so-called too-big-to-fail bank, which is now in the process of being dismantled. Now, Dexia was giving 30% of all the local governments are depending on this Dexia bank to have credit. And in the same time, the French state, which is supposed, which already has been going on an austerity program, has frozen all the subsidies to the local governments for the next 3 years. So the same mayors which have given their signatures to Cheminade to run as a candidate, they did it because they wanted somebody to come into the game and to really bring out the real subject. Now, Cheminade today is touring France. He's backing up local candidates. He was in Arras, in Montauban, in Toulouse, Villemur, in Sète. Yesterday he was in Argenteuil. Tomorrow, today he was in Beaune. And what he says is, the report he gave me today is that one out of five Frenchmen which he meets in the streets recognizes him. It's a total name recognition of Cheminade and also Larouche, because this has been brought up as a so-called scandal that Cheminade is a friend of the Larouche movement. And out of these, one out of five, one out of two, which is only 10%, has a sense of complete respect and people who really know what the program was all about. Now, the government is still in a completely unstable situation. The good point is that Hollande realized before 1 week before the elections, actually Obama gave nearly a full support to Sarkozy, which was a big scandal here because most people of the so-called left have the illusion that Obama is some kind of black progressive person who tries to do social security for everybody. And suddenly this illusion has collapsed. Which is obviously good because the biggest enemy of everybody is to have illusions on the reality of the situation. So now we're moving ahead. There are different openings, and we expect that especially since July, on July 3, there will be the beginning of a parliamentary debate where the separation of banking will be treated in the House. And so we have to really mobilize and try to get, if not people elected, at least in a position to influence the newly elected officials to really do an extraordinary new job.
Thank you. That's great. I was just thinking, Dean, you may want to add something about Greece with how rapidly things are going, but then the... go ahead.
Okay, I think put it in the context of this of the European financial system and the transatlantic financial system. You know, it's like a minefield with a lot of mines, and they're just waiting for one to go off, and then the whole field's going to blow up. And that's sort of what the referendum in Ireland was. And all the bankers, or everyone, was lucky, felt lucky that the mine didn't go off with a no vote. But there was a victory there in any case. As Jean said, the real victory was for Sinn Féin, given that their popularity has gone up to 24%, which at this point means that they are, you know, they are going in the direction of being able to actually be the leading party in Ireland. Now, the other mine is, of course, Spain. The banking system in Spain can explode any time in the next, you know, any time that we're speaking. The whole banking system in Spain could implode. I mean, it's been imploding for the last days. We had this bailout of this very, very large bank, Bankia. The bailout was supposed to be for $3 billion. A few days later, we heard $9 billion, and then a few days later, it ended up being $25 billion. And now we hear that the bad debts of all the banks in Spain are something like $200 billion, close to $200 billion. So it is clear that that's one of the biggest landmines in the field. Now, the other landmine is the Greek situation. And it's not so much that Greece represents, their debt represents such an incredible large amount. That's not the question. The question is that the two things. One is the economic collapse there and the political effect that is having now, because the elections are going to take place on June 17th. But just to give you an idea of just what has been reported in the last couple of days, just this morning it's reported that, or 2 days ago it was reported that 18% of the loans of all the banks in Greece are bad. So something like 44 billion euros worth of bad loans. Two major European export insurance companies have refused to insure exports into Greece. This is like a de facto sanctions, UN sanctions, in effect. Because if Greece is very dependent on imports of things such as medicine and certain food items, and certain very essential items, and if exporters cannot get insurance, these products cannot be imported.
I think probably food might be 40% of the food consumption is imported.
Right, and the medicine situation is already in a crisis situation because the government, which finances the health insurance, owes the pharmacy something like 1.7 billion euros worth funds, which the pharmacy should get reimbursed for the drugs, the medicines which they sell to the, or they actually distribute them because they're covered by insurance, to the population. And now what you have is, and you've had this for a while, where cancer drugs, which are extremely expensive, are almost unavailable. And if they're available, people have to pay for them. So there are people who are literally dying because they cannot afford to get their cancer drugs. There's been a hotline just inaugurated 2 days ago for cancer patients to call on an emergency basis so they can get their medicine. And the thing, it just goes on and on like this. These are African conditions. I mean, we had this scandal where Christine Lagarde, the head of the IMF, says she has no problem telling the Greeks that they have to cut their budget. Greece isn't being done. No, nothing is being done to Greece anything more than it is being done to these African countries. And we know it's being done to these African countries. And this is what is happening in Greece. Now, we have an election in Greece on June 17th. There was an election on May 6th, and this is a follow-up to that because the election did not result in a government. And what it resulted in was an earthquake in the Greek political scene, because the anti-bailout policies parties actually got 68% of the vote. It was spread out among several parties, and because of the way the electoral system works in Greece, the party that receives the most votes gets an extra 50 seats, so they can form a government more easily. And this created a situation where the party that supposedly won only got 18% of the vote and was still unable to form a government. Now, what was extraordinary was that the second party was a party called Syriza, also known as the Coalition of the Radical Left. They got 16% of the vote. And another party called the Independent Greeks, they got 11% of the vote. And there were two other parties that were anti-memorandum as well. And they got, I think, something like 8% and 5% in addition. But the point point was that this party, the Coalition of the Radical Left, usually would get like 3%, 4%, or 5% if they were lucky. But the fact that they were seen as the one of the anti-memorandum parties, they got 16%.
And people know the memorandum is the, in effect, austerity package, the IMF, European Union, European Central Bank.
Yeah, thank you for
bailout. I just point that out. Go ahead, Dean.
Yes. Now, the point is that in the elections coming up, this party could actually win the elections with 30%. And if they did get 30% of the vote, they would get almost close to half the seats in the Greek parliament, and they would have very little problem forming a government with another anti-bailout party that would be sufficient to form a government. Now, this party just yesterday issued their economic manifesto for the elections, and they made it 100% clear. They said, well, the head of the party, Alexis Tsipras, said that we will reject this memorandum. We will repudiate the bailout. There is no compromise on the memorandum. You either accept it or you eliminate it, you repudiate it. And he said his government, if he forms a government, they will repudiate it. Now, on the debt, he said that he's not calling for a full moratorium, but he's saying that the debt can only be paid to the extent that the Greek economy survives and doesn't collapse and is taken out of the current crisis. Now, and that if it requires a debt moratorium for that to be possible, then there will be a debt moratorium. Now, he also called for the nationalization of the banks in the way that what you have now is the banks were recapitalized with government money, but the state takes no management over the banks whatsoever. So he says, well, if we're going to, the banks are going to be recapitalized by government money, then we take over the management of the banks use the banks to supply credit to the real economy. He has there were other positions which I'm not going to go into now, but this will be a political explosion if his party was to win. If his party was not to win and we would get a bailout government, this does not mean a defeat for the Greek people as such. It does not mean a victory for the IMF and the European Union. It just means that there'll be another mine that will explode eventually in a very short time. But the other point, and I think this is the point that's important for Americans to realize, as well as all Europeans outside of Greece, is that this party has also made it clear that they are hoping that there will be a new correlation of forces within Europe, at least, that will overturn the policies of the last year, the last 3 years. That means overturning the austerity, overturning the debt policy, and pursuing a policy that will get the economy not just on its feet, but to pursue a reconstruction policy for Europe. And I think that puts a lot of responsibility on everyone, particularly in the United States, since people see the United States is absolutely crucial. If they implement Glass-Steagall, if they overturn these policies, then Europe will have to follow. So let me leave it there at that.
Right, that's very clear. Thank you very much. And I think we definitely want to go to Italy nearby because, Flavio, I hope you're still on the phone. Okay, I explained to people you've been displaced by this terrible earthquake and you've carried on your own personal individual organizing for Glass-Steagall and Reconstruction as again, along with the Movisol political movement there, against the Monti kind of bailout by bureaucracy, and people are supposed to roll over and die. But why don't you go ahead and give an update, Flavio?
Yes. On the 10th of May, a school trade union published an article on separating banks and saving the school system, which I remembered all the citizens, the forecast by Lynn and by Jacques Cheminade, by Lino LaRouche and Jacques Cheminade, and the fact that we need a real shift in the policy and the political economy worldwide. And I demonstrated that if we separate banks, we can cancel all the illegitimate debts and emit credits in complete security. Yesterday afternoon, I took some time between all the actions and all the little problems we have with the earthquake to demonstrate. I made a one-man demonstration on the main square of Mirandola, in a situation where almost all the television sets or troops were already leaving because what is sensational had been already consumed for the audience law. But by the way, I prepared two posters that I'm going to publish on our website in Italy. One poster was calling for the separation of banks again, and the second, one poster had the first title, separate banks, and had a second title, emit credit and emit national productive credit by getting out of the Maastricht treaties or agreements. And I also put a little polemical phrase against this bankers or banksters government we have by saying that sobriety. How do you say sobriety?
Sobriety.
Sorry. Yes. Sobriety. Sobriety doesn't work so much. And the second poster was just a reference to Roosevelt. I was saying we need a Roosevelt, you know, for the medium and little enterprises to get on their feet again. And I could provoke some little discussions with the few citizens left in the town, because for the weekend many went away just for a quiet moment with their babies or children and so on. So in these discussions I crossed the idea that little can be done to reverse the situation, the economic crisis before the earthquake and the very big problems we have now with the earthquake. But I insisted by saying that there are no choices in this sort of war we are managing. And some journalists, which were nearby me, as the readers will see on our site, promised me to, you know, promises by journalists are not so to be are not always taken. But they promised to interview me the next week. Together with some economists, so-called economists, in order to discuss our proposals. Let's see what they will do, if they will do or not.
Right. Go ahead and give your website, Flavio.
Our website is www.movisol, which is spelled like M-O-V-I-S-O-L, and then .org. And in a few minutes, I will publish while I listen to you and I intervene with and I speak with you. I will publish the update with our pictures, with the pictures of my action. The question is, the big question in Mirandola, mainly Mirandola, is that we have a worldwide center for the production of biomedical parts and machines, like machines for dialysis.
Biomedical work activity center. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And in a few days or weeks, I think, or I forecast that many hospitals will have problems, because all the big companies, and not only big companies, but all the tissue, or the political, the economic tissue behind the hospitals is now down. And so when the machines in the hospitals will have problems, or solutions will be needed to treat the patients, will happen or will arrive, we will have many, many problems, I fear. One other problem the people in the town fear is that this could be taken as the right moment to delocalize the production, which is a measure which we have been fearing for 10 or 15 years. Because the phenomenon is this: in the last 40 years, many companies were born by this mechanism. The first was founded 40 years ago or so, and when it became of success, it was sold to a multinational, because the multinational company had many more possibilities to sell products worldwide than could be done from Italy. And with the capital gained by this selling, the local heads produced another company, and they produced a new prototype, and it worked very well. So they sold again, the complete structure, the products, the machines, the plants, and so on, to another multinational. So this has been the mechanism for years and years. And we can say now that globalization has taken away a local bank from Mirandola and left only a few managing offices in Mirandola, or let's say Italian managing or Italian executive offices of these companies. So the question is that since globalization tends to move production where production is less expensive, people here say that if the government don't move very quickly and don't give the needed money to reconstruct, so the big multinationals will decide definitively to move away with the production. And so the Mirandola district risks very, very much to get back in the history and become again an agricultural land. This is very, very problematic. And when in the first hours after the first quake of, it was the May 20th, if I don't remember badly, in the first hours the government was waving in front of the proposal of the request from the region to be helped, and this waving could be the lever we could work on to make the government fall down.
Uh-huh. Well, that's
The problem is that we aren't able to understand for the moment what the earthquake will do in the near future. A big part of the region has been alerted, and it seems that tents are lacking already. So if the quake moves along some lines, some geological lines, and go and hit other places, again, we will have other problems.
Right.
Have you a question?
Yes, please. From Kirill in Paris.
Yes.
Is there any, with this earthquake, obviously, it will be enormous demand for a credit to reconstruct everything which is broken down. Is there any debate to change the austerity program and throw it in the garbage can and have a different policy?
I cannot catch your voice. There are some...
I can repeat it. I'll repeat it. Since is there the view that in view of the damage from the quake, that the government austerity, Monti austerity program, should be thrown in the garbage, should be got rid of, and an actual reconstruction-oriented program be put into place?
I think, for example, yesterday or this night, I watched a political debate, a local political debate on this problem, and a representative of a trade chamber of Modena was saying that from Bruxelles or in Bruxelles or in Rome, they do not read clearly, or they do not understand the specificity of our little and medium enterprises net in Emilia region. They don't understand it, and so they won't be able to help us in the proper manner. And so we decided to write to this representative in order to try to develop a flank together. This is our hoping, precisely for to that aim. If we can succeed in mobilizing the local population and also Italy by demonstrating that this government is incompetent on the big questions of economy and economic planning and economic and emergency intervention, maybe this could be the good moment or the good point to which causing its falling. This is my evaluation. I don't know if I'm ready or I'm correct on this, but
Karel, do you want to follow that up? I think we have the technical problem solved, but that he has answered your question. Do you have more?
No.
I have a question for Karel.
I have one other thing to add to what Dean said on Greece, because today Le Figaro has a rare article on the danger of that Tsipras and that this party, Syriza, actually can win the election, because they say that last week New Democracy was on top of the main polls, but they say now Syriza is of the election polls with 22% of the voting intention. So that's promising.
Well, I mean, all these polls, the Greek polls are notorious for being manipulated and wrong. For instance, before the last election, one of my Greek friends was always of the opinion, well, all the polls you hear, you've been hearing before the election about that the PASOK and the New Democracy will be hit hard. These aren't real polls. You will see that at the end of the day, the PASOK, the former leading party, and the New Democracy, they're going to win the election. And there were in fact polls that were secretly circulating, because as of today, like 2 weeks before the election, you can't, all polls stop. So for the next 2 weeks, there's no official polls. But the point is that there were polls, secret polls circulating that indeed PASOK and New Democracy would win. They would get about almost 30%. And what happened was quite the opposite. PASOK got 14%. And the New Democracy got 18%. Now, I don't know whether Syriza is going to win or not, but these polls don't mean a lot. The other side of it is what Gene mentioned, is the population is being terrorized. I mean, if you pick up, you could imagine what it's like in Greece when you pick up the newspaper. Here you're in Greece, your salary has been cut by 30%, or you've lost your job. Almost one-third of the population is unemployed. All government workers have to have their salaries cut by at least 25%, if not more. Private sector workers as well, the ones who are lucky enough to work. And here you have the press every day. Greece is going to get thrown out of the euro. This guy Tsipras is a lunatic. He's a Marxist. He's going to create a situation where Greece will be thrown out. You have 50% inflation. All the money will leave the country, and blah blah blah. So, and this is every day in the press. And the real question is this: in Greece, are people going to, is a part of that population going to say enough is enough and say no and vote for the parties that are going to stand up and say no? That's one side of it. And of course they themselves, at the end of the day, if they're isolated, they can't win. And that behooves us in the United States and in the other countries of Europe that are far more powerful, to do what we have to do and get this Glass-Steagall policy, through. And even if, I'll leave it at that because I'm not going to speculate on what's going to happen in 2 weeks because we might not have a financial system in the next 2 weeks here in Europe if the Spanish banking system continues to implode.
Yes, one footnote to what you just said. I saw what you filed today, Dean, in the way of daily updates that you were saying about the chain reactions of non-payment within Greece that's reached the stage of medicine cuts, food jeopardized, imports jeopardized, electricity for the next election is jeopardized, right? Because the import, you can say, the gas imports are in jeopardy, haven't been paid. That's how the electricity is produced, right?
Right. Well, this is this brings us back to what we're seeing now in Italy. I mean, the total moral bankruptcy of this political class in Europe that supports the bailout. You have Flavio can say a lot more than I can on this. Having a government that's a puppet government that's not elected, and since they're not elected, they don't have to worry about voters throwing them out of office. So they can, when you have a catastrophe, which Flavio this is personally experiencing, you don't have to do anything. And Monti, who was an employee of, I think he worked for Goldman Sachs before he became prime minister, he knows where his interests are, and they don't lie in the neighborhood where Flavio now is suffering under these terrible conditions of the earthquake.
Well, that brings us around to certain moments when there is a grasping of the truth because of certain events or singular events. I'll mention one here. You may comment on it. But as of a few weeks ago, when lawfully one of the major, it wasn't Goldman Sachs, it was J.P. Morgan Chase, had to announce, oh, sorry, we had lost $2 billion in gambling. That turned into $4 billion. I think it's headed toward $20 billion. And somehow or other, this was a spark in the dry tinder of taking fire. In other words, people suddenly grasped, who had wanted to deny it or wanted to not pay attention, that, hey, realistically, we should have Glass-Steagall. That's what we should do. I'm giving that as an example in the United States. And we're now at the point of instances of all kind can feed this if we do what, Dean, you are just recommending. We all individually figure out what you can do, but do it now, don't wait, right? Does someone want to add to that?
Marcia, I don't know if it is pertinent, but we published on our website some days ago, it was on the 26th of May, news because the day before, 2 days before, Monti was in television and he was questioned about the separation of banks. And he finally said that it's not relevant because Italy is out of the big financial problems we have in the world. So he's using really a stoppism, trying to keep the theorem, the big theorem, continue.
Right. And those are...
One thing somehow interesting is that today, Silvio Berlusconi, on his, I think it was a Facebook account or something like that, published a short line by saying, why don't we get out of the euro and we start again with the lira? Adding to this the proposal that the central bank prints money. After some hours, he wrote again by saying that he was joking. But it could reflect some discussions inside his political party, or maybe with people around the Tremonti. And this could be symptomatical.
I think you're absolutely, symptomatic, all right. And that brings us, I'm afraid the hour flew past, and it does bring us to the fact we're at the Glass-Steagall moment. That's the only thing that can halt the global breakdown. We've heard details about this. And I thank you all for participating today, Jean, Flavio, Dean, and Carell. And so this will bring to a close the June 2nd, 2012 LaRue Show. Thank you all very much.
Okay.